On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, today's episode of the podcast is going to be another group episode. I'll have the guys introduce themselves and then we'll hop in. So we'll go Logan first, Jordan second, and then Joe last. Just name, current position, anything relevant, and then we'll get going.
Yeah, Logan Byman, currently working with Exos in the Frisco location, formerly with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Excited to be here.
I'm Jordan Sidwell. I'm the minor league strength and conditioning coordinator with the Braves. This will be my fifth year and second year as a coordinator.
I'm Joe Hudson. I'm the AA strength coach with the Red Sox.
Guys, today is going to be a discussion on upper body training for baseball players. There's a lot of hot topics on this, a lot of different opinions. So hopefully we can at least keep this, you know, semi-civilized, and if an all-out war breaks out, that's fine too. But first question for you guys, because this is always the one that should be the kicker with upper body training. In your opinion, should overhead athletes and specifically baseball players bench press, and probably specifically barbell bench press?
Yeah, I guess I'll go first here. I'm going to say not that you have to or you should, but if it lines up with maybe someone whose goal is trying to throw harder and increase output that way, I think it's a really good exercise that has got some benefits that we kind of be silly to overlook and just throw it out for everyone. So if you're a guy who, again, fits into that category of throwing velocity in particular being something that could be holding you back, I think it's a really good exercise that has some ways of progressing it to train that accordingly. So I'm not going to say that every single guy should or shouldn't do it. It's going to depend on your goals. And for some goals, I think it's probably a better tool than some other options, you know, like dumbbells, push-ups, and some other things you can get into there. But it's going to depend on the guy. And just like for lower body training, some guys might single leg, double leg, squat, deadlift, what have you, depending on where they are and what they need to work on. I think it's the same thing with the upper body, and bench press is one of those things that's just like any other tool. Depends on the goal and ultimately what's going to hold the guy back baseball wise.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, and I think I've said on our individual podcast when you ask, you know, what's one of the things that people might think you're crazy for in strength and conditioning, like, I do believe that bench press has a spot in there. And like Jordan said, like, it's not necessarily a perfect fit for everybody. You know, for a long time, it's been very, very taboo to have baseball players bench press. And I don't think it's bad. It's as bad as, you know, maybe it gets, you know, it gets the rap for. So I'm in the same boat there. I think it really depends on what the goals are. It depends on, you know, an athlete's experience with it and, you know, where they're at currently in their training program. And I think it still can be a very beneficial exercise for them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably going to be pretty much in line with both of those. You know, it's a tool. And at the end of the day, I think if you're having a fight about one specific movement, you probably missed the boat in the first place. You know, there's a lot of movements out there. If it fits within your philosophy, within the player's goals, it's a tool that you can utilize. You know, I think there's a lot of different variations, just like Jordan mentioned. I mean, you know, you did say barbell bench press, but let's limit it to just barbell and just bench press. You got floor press. You've got accommodating resistance that you could use. I mean, there's so many options, even to the point where, you know, you could strap that up where it was, you know, there's variable resistance on it if you hang kettlebells off of it or whatever. So there's so many options within that. That's, you know, the questions to me that come up aren't, you know, do I want to use barbell bench press? It's what is my athlete needs assessment looking like? You know, what are the ranges of motion that the athlete has within their capacities? What are their strength levels? and what's the outcome goal? And then if that, those questions lead me to barbell bench press in some fashion, I don't think there's a problem with it. But if you're saying we need a barbell bench press and then trying to fit people into it before you've answered the other questions, then that's when there's an issue. I don't think there's an issue with an exercise in particular.
Yeah, and I guess benching for me kind of branches off of something that I think interacts with a lot of other upper body baseball training topics. And that's the idea that's kind of been run with, that scapular dyskinesis, or how your scapula moves on your thorax, is this really critical factor in shoulder pain and injury. And that stems from, you know, the physical therapy community and some things that have, again, just kind of been commonly accepted as, oh, okay, this is important. We need to upwardly rotate. We need to posteriorly tilt, and so on and so forth. It's kind of just been accepted without being questioned that, oh yeah, this has an impact on pain and injury in the shoulder. And actually, if you look at kind of some of the most up-to-date research and some of the reviews of everything that's out there right now, based on what we know right now, there doesn't seem to be any strong influence of what your shoulder blade is doing in relation to your arm, and if that has any bearing on consequently having pain or injury after that. It's essentially a coin flip between different people looking at someone's scapular humeral rhythm, which one is dysfunctional and which one is healthy. And it's about a 50-50 toss-up, same thing, as to whether or not any of that actually manifests itself as predictive of pain or injury. So in some ways, again, if you're looking at some of the up-to-date stuff coming out of the physical therapy world, they're not even sure that it makes a difference for pain and injury. And I think we've kind of taken that lens of, man, we can't bench press because it locks your scaps into place, or we can't bench press because you're internally rotated and that's increasing the risk of impingement because you're having less space in here for everything to move around. All of those things, like, we can't even confidently say that they really matter with regards to pain or injury. So if we take that lens and look at our upper body training through that, are we cutting a lot of really useful tools out for something that ultimately might not even matter? And I'm not saying that we don't think about how your scaps are moving, or we don't train some of those motions. But again, when I'm writing a program right now, I don't want to put 75% of my emphasis and my influence on something that 5, 6, 7 years from now, as more research continues to come out, might not even be a thing. But we just accepted it as being a thing because it's just been said so many times that these are important for baseball and it's important for shoulder pain and injury. And that goes beyond just benching, but I think bench press is probably the thing that's been written off the most because of that entire philosophy of, again, your shoulder blades and how that relates to pain and injury moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I would, to piggyback off of that, you know, throwing motion, you need internal rotation. So to be able to go into internal rotation safely is probably very important. You know, so you could have an argument that you may actually be put in positions, assuming you have the capacity to handle those. You know, I mean, where the scapular position is within that movement, you know, I would say that you do need to train scapular motion. I would want people to have the ability to move their scapula anywhere they wanted to. But I may select bench press. I'm not training that at that time. I'm training something else. It doesn't mean that you're disregarding scapular motion. That exercise isn't directed at it. It's like, you know, you're bench pressing. Why are you ignoring legs? I'm not. That's just not the goal of this exercise, right? If I want a leg exercise, I'm going to do something that involves the lower half. So, you know, you don't have to accomplish every goal with every exercise.
Yeah, I don't think that the total of maybe 3 minutes of actually performing repetitions of benching over a couple sets of a workout, I just don't see how that is going to overrule all the other things that you might do that, again, encourage your scapula moving around the rib cage, not to mention just walking around day-to-day life, not to mention throwing a baseball. So the idea to me that, again, we're going to spend a couple minutes bench pressing with our shoulders locked into place because that's the best way to perform that exercise, that's somehow going to override, again, other times when our scaps are moving around. And like you said, Logan, like, that's not what we're trying to train with that exercise. So it's the fact that it doesn't check that box, like, doesn't really matter because that's not the purpose that we're trying to use it for.
Right. I think the same, you know, what you guys are saying is completely, like, spot on. It really depends, like, you know, what else is in the program for that day. You know, if you're just benching and that's it, you know, that's one thing. If you have bench, you know, barbell bench press in your program, but you also have in some sort of, you know, whatever it is, anything that's going to influence upward scap rotation or anything like that, like that's not going to completely dominate your program to where everything that you're getting is just super locked scaps and everything like that. So, you know, it depends on what the program looks like too on an upper body type day. If you're, you know, if maybe your major exercise is barbell bench, but you're including other things that are have more free rhythm and movement of the scaps, like how much of an impact is that going to have, and how much of a negative impact is that going to have on a baseball player's performance? I don't think very much, honestly.
You're taking a really acute view too. You know, it's one exercise in a hypothetical scenario where you don't know, are they in season or out of season? What are the capacities of the athlete as far as range of motion, as far as strength levels go? What are the goals of the athlete? You know, what does the rest of the program look like? Is it a, you know, what does the rest of that day look like? Is it total body? Is it just upper body? Is it an upper body push session, or are you, you know, mixing push and pull? And there's so many other variables that you would have to really be able to put your foot down and say either, you know, A, it needs to be in this workout, or B, it doesn't need to be in this workout.
And if you're actually looking at, again, based on what we know with some evidence behind it for a weight room exercise that correlates somewhat with throwing velocity, like it's actually, again, most of the evidence has stronger relationships with like a bench press peak power, like a bench press throwing Smith machine over any lower body exercise right now, which again, at the end of the day, when you're throwing a baseball, we're going to be internally rotating as fast as we can. We're going to be having some shoulder extension and elbow extension and all of those things. The musculature involved is going to be trained bench pressing. And again, with that one tool, maybe you're not using it all the time for every goal, but there are a lot of things that you can train with that it lends itself more easily to training than maybe a dumbbell or a cable or push-up will. Like if we can agree that it's worth training higher rep ranges, lower rep ranges, moderate rep ranges, sometimes heavier, sometimes lighter, but going as fast as you can, I just don't think you're gonna be able to cover all of those different stimulus with, you know, dumbbells and again, cables and push-ups. You know, try doing, say it's the time of the year where, you know, maximum strength is the focus, and that's gonna set the stage for things that come later, like power or speed. Say you want, you know, an exercise that can allow you to train the upper body in repetition ranges of 3 or less. You'd be hard pressed to do a heavy triple on a dumbbell bench and first of all, get things into position correctly to perform, much less spot that safely if something goes off the rails. But you know what exercise works great for, again, some heavier loading that you can spot safely and load incrementally little by little, like a barbell bench press. Again, taking that one step further, maybe it's the time of year where now you're moving into higher velocities and more power output moving quickly. Again, the inherent instability of some of these other options like a dumbbell, I think is going to take away their usefulness as a tool for training something like power. And again, based on what we know with some evidence behind it, like there might be something to peak power on a bench press and some higher velocity pressing that way. And the stability of a barbell there allows you to train that quality without the stability taking away from those max outputs. So no, like it's not the only, it's like the be all end all, but if you're looking at all the different things you train, in terms of rep ranges and strength qualities, I think the barbell bench will give you a lot more things that you can train with that, where the exercise, you're not fighting the exercise to try to train a quality with it, if that makes sense.
You've also got variable options even within that, you know, where if you have range of motion issues, if you pin press or block press, you can restrict those ranges of motion into ranges of motion you are comfortable with. Right, there are football bars or Swiss bars that will allow you to change the grip on those bar on the exercise itself. So, you know, issues that come up, there are workarounds for those. If you really don't want to be on a straight bar for whatever reason, you know, I mean, you're going to get athletes that are limited in their capacities to do certain motions, and you can adjust for that. You know, and there may be some people that it doesn't fit for, but I think you're just hard pressed to give an overarching yes or no on an exercise.
There's a specific video of a left-handed, very dominant reliever who bench presses a lot, and he throws fuego. And there's the two sides, like, oh, he's a freak, so he can bench press. And then the other side is like, oh, everybody should bench press because this guy's throwing gas. And it's like, I think everything that you guys have hit on, right, you have to factor in so many things to make your decision, right? It's not just one video that you see on Twitter or Instagram of so-and-so is doing this exercise and he throws hard, so everybody should do it. Like, I think if you filter it with a lens, like you guys are saying, I think that's more appropriate. So let's dive into that a little bit more. Pitcher versus position player, like, how are you determining what guy is going to be able to bench press? Like, let's say full range of motion, straight barbell. Like, give me some of the factors that really determine that for you, whether you're going to let the guy bench or not.
Yeah. So I don't know that we've got right now, we've got a set criteria of a screen that's going to tell us. My default right now is like, let's do everything we can, not just in terms of bench pressing, but exercise selection wise, lower body too, until we run into, again, discomfort or a scenario that prevents us that, versus we're defaulting to a backup option and we're, you know, waiting for someone to prove to us that they can do this thing. I don't know that I've got a good way to, you know, screen out with anything that's not the exercise itself, whether or not it's going to fit for someone. So we kind of default to like, hey, for this time of the year, we're training, you know, off season, heavier strength and getting into power. Like, we've got, you know, football bars here at our complex, and that's kind of our, that's our default option for training this quality. Now, for whatever reason, again, previous injury history, or for whatever reason that we can't explain, they're just having discomfort with it. Cool. Like, we can default to our backup options. But over the last couple of years, I've gone more to that lens of, hey, let's go to our A1, like our primary exercise choice for training the quality that we want. And we'll branch off from there versus everyone being in this like modified range and only a couple people can prove to us that they get the, our preferred exercise, whether that be, you know, back squatting, you know, something with the lower body, or in the case of pressing, you know, a bench press with either a straight bar or a football Swiss bar.
Yeah. The only things that I would, you know, look at initially, like Jordan said, I mean, I think you have your A1 option that, that pretty much everybody's going to get. I know when I was with the Pirates and currently with Exos, we do a lot of range of motion testing. You know, if someone is lacking the ability to pronate, right, you may not want to straight bar them if you know that's going to put an excess amount of torque on their elbow because they're unable to get in that fully pronated position. If you're measuring internal rotation, you know that they don't have enough internal rotation, you may not feel safe putting them in those positions. But for the large majority of guys that you get, they're going to be within a standard of ability to do those, because both of those things are required when throwing a baseball. And if you're a position player or a pitcher, you still have to throw a baseball. So the majority of those guys have those capacities because they're required within the sport that they already play. There will be certain scenarios where you may want to shy away from that if a guy doesn't have a capacity. But like Jordan mentioned, yeah, you got Swiss bars at the facility. If that's your A1 option, you've removed the pronation issue already, right? So now it's potentially just looking at internal rotation. If you needed to reduce the depth, that's not a very difficult thing to do. You know, and then you're working on those range of motion issues on the backside of that, so that there will be a point where that would not be an issue anymore. And in Jordan's, you know, based off what Jordan was saying too, I've had athletes where you measure their range of motion and you're like, they shouldn't be able to do this. And then they do it, you know? So it's not a complete, I don't think anybody has the, like, this is the answer to the problem, you know? Their athletes find ways to do things, you know, you just want to make sure that their compensation patterns are not going to cause other issues down the road.
Yeah, I think you look at the risk reward in that a little bit too, you know, separating pitchers versus position players and what, you know, essentially what's going to cause some potential issues down the road. Like, if, let's say, movement performance under the bench, you know, under the bar during a bench press isn't, you know, completely up to the standards that we would like them to be. So, you know, when things go wrong, you know, where is it going to impact more? Is it going to impact more the position player or pitcher? Most likely, in my opinion, a pitcher, just because of the repetitions and number of throws that they're going to get in a performance and in an outing. So I think you have a little bit more buffer room per se with a position player when it comes to getting them, you know, getting them under the bar in that situation where, like, if something does go wrong, it may not have as much of an influence or an impact as it would, say, for a pitcher in particular, maybe a starting pitcher on their more of their upper body day. I think it has more of an influence there, but you know, I think it still all goes back to, like, at the end of the day, do they have the movement capacity to be able to do that? And if something does go wrong, given, you know, the group that we're working with, professional athletes, like, they need to be able to throw a baseball to be able to be successful in their sport, you know, and in their careers. So, you know, there's maybe a little bit more risk when it comes to doing that with a pitcher. But again, I think it falls back to, do they have the movement capabilities to do that? And then where we are in their, you know, in their training program, in season, off season, you know, preseason, whatever.
I think Jordan kind of hit on this a little bit, and this is back piggybacking on some stuff that Joe mentioned as well. There's inherently risk with anything that you're going to do, right? So, you know, Jordan mentioned the instability of dumbbell options in many cases, right? Where if there's certain options that you're trying to get out of that training stimulus, whether it's, you know, extremely high load because you're working on a max strength phase, or if it's, you know, max power where you're trying to move something, you know, really, really quickly. There are inherent issues with anything, you know. So somebody says, oh, we cannot barbell bench press, there's too many issues. Well, what are you doing instead for upper body strength, upper body power, upper body training? Because there are inherent risks involved with those exercises as well. If you're picking an exercise that has zero inherent risk, one, I don't know what exercise you'd be picking. And two, I doubt it would be very effective at doing whatever it is you're trying to do, right? It's the same with lower body exercises. You know, that's not limited to upper body either. So, you know, you are constantly assessing risk reward with anything that you program. And then, you know, when you're putting those exercises in, writing the program itself is strength coach 101, right? That's every strength coach writes programs. They know how to do that. The art of strength and conditioning comes in when, like Jordan's saying, you're watching those guys do those movements, right? And Joe, yeah, I believe you hit on this as well. You know, you're watching that happen. You're assessing them as they go through those movements. If somebody is dumping their shoulder forward at the bottom of the movement, like Joe was saying, and you're not seeing the capacities that you're looking for during the action of bench pressing in this case, you're probably going to adjust that movement because you're not comfortable with the positions that they're in. You know, but that's the art of it, is watching them move through space, deciding whether or not you can cue them into a proper position, or whether it's a capacity based issue where they cannot do it properly, and then you adjust.
Yeah. And my final thoughts on this particular, you know, one exercise topic, there's a very big psychological and expectation component to how we experience discomfort and pain and all that. It's not only a structural thing. There's a lot of things we can point to that kind of point out as to why, you know, we can't always explain these things with just the biology and just the structure. But if we have a player who's like coming into our system and this is the only way he's known how to train, we're going to take him through a progression. Like when we teach push-ups, we'll probably do a hand release push-up fairly early on. If you think about position you're in for a hand release push-up, like that's actually in some cases a longer range of motion, more horizontal abduction and shoulder extension and so on, than what you'll get with the barbell bench. And you don't see guys having issues with that. So like if we start with that as part of our teaching progression on a push-up, like we're going to see pretty early on, like guys letting us know if for whatever reason, a range of motion isn't feeling all that great. And I don't know if I can explain why they would have discomfort, but we're never going to try to force a guy into something that feels bad. But if they're coming to us as a blank slate, like their expectation of training is going to be training full ranges of motion with no expectation of like, oh, make sure you avoid this, or make sure you stay out of this position or this exercise. And if they don't expect that that's going to be dangerous for them, I think they've got better likelihood of good outcomes from all those exercises. Now, to contrast that, say we have a guy who's come to us as a upper level free agent, and he's come up in a system or he's had someone who's told him that this exercise is bad or dangerous, or you need to stay out of this position, you need to stay out of this range of motion. It's probably not going to feel great because the psychological component of his expectations there he's essentially been tainted towards that exercise in a way, right? If you think it's going to hurt, it's probably going to hurt. It's the nocebo and placebo effect of not just training, but medicine and everything else. Like that's so huge that, hey, if I've got a guy who's in double A and he doesn't want to do it because of his prior, what he's been told, like we're not going to force him into it because he's expecting to have pain or discomfort from that exercise. So, and also at that point, you're much more fully formed of who you are as a player and an athlete at the point anyway, that, hey, if you think it's going to hurt, like I'm not going to push it on you because it probably will because of your expectations. And I think collectively, like as a profession and as an industry here, we need to be careful that we don't label any training or any exercise as inherently dangerous or bad or stay out of this range of motion, this position, so on and so forth. Because again, the psychological component is such a huge piece of this, that if you're with social media and all that, if kids are coming into programs expecting that something's going to hurt or that I saw that I shouldn't do this exercise or XYZ, like, yeah, they're more likely to have issues with it because of that reason. So like nobody out there go tainting any of these exercises or training methods, because you kind of ruin it for the rest of us on the back end if we want to use it later. And that goes beyond just bench pressing. There's a host of lower body up exercises and other training methods that kind of gotten the same treatment. So depends where the guy is, what his expectations are of an exercise and of training. And I think more than anything else, we try to keep our coaches here from not creating those negative expectations with any aspect of training.
I think the opposite of that's true too, right? Like we get athletes that really want to barbell bench press, right? And there's something about, you know, there's a certain give and take that you have as a strength and conditioning coach with your athletes. You know, you need them to do some of what you want them to do. And as a byproduct, if you allow them to do some of the things that they want to do, you get a little bit better on the give and take side. So to say, you know, this guy really wants to bench press, but is that really where you want to put your, you know, your flag in the sand on, no, we will not do that. Or is that a feasible option for this guy? You let him do it, and then you're able to make some inroads on some other things that might be bigger issues down the road.
That was a thought for me, Logan, is like, I can remember in AAA, I had a guy that was, you know, just like meathead, big, strong dude. And he's like, I want to bench press. And I'm like, we kind of don't do that in the org. And he's like, I don't care, I'm going to bench. And I'm like, all right, go ahead. And the thing is, like, he was familiar with the exercise. I knew him as a person, and it wasn't like he was loading it super heavy, and we kind of progressed it accordingly. And then that allowed me to get some victories with some stuff I wanted to do, like with his squatting and deadlifting. And so I agree 100%. Like, I've seen it firsthand, is like, if you pick your battles appropriately. And again, I think for me, it comes down to knowing how familiar they are with any given exercise, right? Like we're talking about bench press, but if a guy hasn't squatted in months and then we load him up on a squat, like his legs are going to be toast, his low back's going to be toast. Like even if he is in good form, like it's just that overload is going to be too much for him. Where if he's been building up the squat for a while, like he's fine. He's going to be fine to load appropriately. So I agree with you guys. I don't want to keep just bashing the bench press, because we have a ton of other topics that are also very hot on the upper body. So my next question for you guys: should overhead athletes, and then again, more specifically baseball players, train overhead?
I think that's the bigger, probably controversial topic in my opinion. Like bench press is like not, just from my standpoint, like bench press isn't that big of a hot topic. I think it's more of like a, should they overhead press kind of topic. And I think, you know, going back to the beginning of what we, you know, when we originally started discussing, you know, the scap function during a bench press versus during, you know, push-ups or any sort of like free scap movement, I think that's the bigger question is, you know, if a guy lacks like good, you know, glenohumeral rhythm and, you know, scap rhythm and upward rotation, like shoulder flexion, I think those are more of the issues that kind of come into play in our setting, in the baseball setting, of like, should a guy overhead press more so than should a guy bench or, you know, bench press or dumbbell bench press instead. I think it's incredibly important, but again, it kind of falls back, and I'm sure just kind of based off of what everyone's saying here, like I'm sure we'll kind of all fall in the same category with this too. Like the biggest thing overall is like, you have the capacity to be able to get up there, right? So, and I think that's where I would feel more comfortable saying like, that's going to separate how I program guys a little bit more, just based on if they, frankly, if they have the shoulder flexion to be able to get up there or not. And I think personally, that is more of the hot topic of upper body training. Should a guy overhead press? Is it, you know, regardless if it's a, you know, just some sort of barbell overhead press or some sort of half kneeling, you know, dumbbell overhead press, do they have the shoulder flexion in the upward rotation and everything like that to be able to get up there to where they're not putting an incredible stress on their shoulder joint? So I think yes, it's incredibly important, but again, you're going to have those kind of outliers that just don't have great shoulder flexions, where the risk reward in that situation probably isn't, you know, isn't favorable to pressing them overhead. But again, it's going to go back to, you know, a case by case basis with how you program that.
Yeah. I mean, for me right now, the shoulder flexion and again, your range of motion of your scapula and how those things relate to each other, I just don't put a whole lot of stock in that, like with anything we're doing right now, just again, based on the, what we've got for evidence in front of us, it doesn't seem to be that big of a deal or something that you even really change that much. It's just kind of something that it is what it is. And again, doesn't seem to have huge impacts on pain, injury, and this varies amongst people there. That being said, so I don't write off exercise because we don't have enough of this or this, you know, to do it correctly. But that being said, the practicality of, say, taking a barbell and pressing it over your head in our setting doesn't always work the best, even though I might like the exercise, partially because there's a lot of variation to do it correctly to get what I want out of the exercise. Because actually, if you get your grip in the right place, you do it correctly, you'll end up lining your arm up in the scapular plane real nice. And if you're pretty diligent and kind of conscious about how you're doing things, like you can get some good, again, low trap work, rotator cuff work, shoulder flexion work, using a bar in some ways that it's kind of tough to replicate with some other options there, which can be great if that's something that you're trying to train, is again, stability overhead and rotator cuff strength, which is again, happening reflexively from trying to hold something heavy over your head. So I actually like the exercise a lot, but the practicality in our setting doesn't always work because it's tough to get a lot of people to do it correctly and pay attention to some of the finer details. And going back to what I touched on earlier with the expectations and the narrative that's been created around certain exercises, like if you have a hard time like getting someone to not expect that a bench is going to hurt, like the overhead press has just been written off so bad that I don't know if there's a baseball player out there that would come into the org who hasn't already had the seed planted that is dangerous or injurious for them. So for that reason, like we're already fighting an uphill battle in terms of the expectations, and that makes it even harder for us to use it because again, kind of industry and profession overall has written it off and again, planted these negative seeds for people. So I actually like the exercise. It does, it checks some boxes for me, but given our situation and who we're working with and all the other practical parts of choosing exercise, we don't end up using it for that reason, but it's not because I don't like the exercise.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have, two probably relatively contradictory views on that. For on one side, if you are going to play overhead, your sport is going to exist overhead, you should probably be strong overhead, just from an injury reduction and performance standpoint. However, that does depend on your ability to do it, your capacities to do it, you know, pre-existing expectations that are involved as well. Now, there are, again, 1,000 variations that you can do overhead, even to the degree of, you know, what are we considering overhead, right? Like what degree becomes overhead? Is incline bench overhead? Is landmine pressing where you're, you know, a little bit out in front still overhead? Is directly overhead the only overhead that we're going to go with? So it depends on the degree of overhead that I'm willing to go. You know, if somebody does not have the ability to get directly overhead, do I want to train that and watch them, you know, arch their back the whole time? No, because my goal here is developing, you know, more than likely some sort of shoulder complex capacity, not lower back capacity. So if you're using your lower back to then get overhead and fake that position that you can't access through your shoulder, then I'm probably not super keen on it. you know, but there are so many other options, right? If I have you press slightly forward and you're able to maintain the postures that I'm looking for, and I can get any other necessities accomplished in another way, then I'm going to go ahead and stick with that option. If I have an athlete that can press directly overhead and stay in good positions, I'm comfortable with that, then I'm going to allow them to press overhead. But again, there's so many variations with that too. You dumbbell, or you landmine, or you half kneeling, or you split stance, or, you know, I mean, there's, you can even offload people's spines a little bit with going with various bench options, incline, high incline. You can even take those landmine variations where we always think about an upright torso. Well, if I get that torso leaned forward and then I press overhead, sometimes when people don't have to stabilize as much load through their spine, they're able to stay in more of a neutral spine. And now the ground is eating a little bit more of that force. So there's just so many options that you have that, you know, I think you do need to be strong in an overhead position. So in some way you need to train that. But I do think at times too, we think about baseball and everybody's like, oh yeah, overhead athletes. There are very few people that throw from here. Typically it's here somewhere. And most athletes are probably pretty solid in these ranges of motion with being able to press, you know? So again, how do you want to define overhead, and what is needed for shoulder health, for athlete health, and for performance?
I think the only, unless I'm picking an exercise like based on torso and pelvic control and like strengthening or controlling, that's my goal. I'm really on that, not even that concerned anymore with other exercises, the position of the spine and flex and extension, neutral, any of that. I think the only time for me right now that I could point to a specific, like this particular person when they're doing an overhead exercise or an upper body exercise, we want to be mindful of that because it's going to impact performance, would maybe be like a swimmer who has to have full shoulder flexion while not getting too extended in their back, because that affects their streamline shape and how they cut through the water and actually swim faster or slower. But I'm again, based on what we know right now, I'm not super concerned about flexion, extension, neutral, unless that's an exercise that I'm trying to train that quality or that movement out of. So like, I won't write an upper body exercise off because someone can't do that while maintaining a position in their spine. Unless the spine position was the reason I was using the exercise in the first place, in which case I'd pick one that lends itself more to training that area without the upper body being involved. So again, I've gotten a lot looser over the years of what I will and won't do. And I think we've been a lot more aggressive this off season collectively as a group with what we've done with all of our overhead options, especially on the pulling side too. Like, you get into the pulling and chin-ups, pull downs, and you know, are they too lat intensive? Like, should you be doing chin-ups for baseball guys? Like, we've been doing those. We've been emphasizing like some hangs and some loaded hangs, trying to get our shoulder flexion work to be just a little bit more intense and actually create some structural meaningful change there through some load, through some of these longer ranges of motion, versus in the past, maybe we would have done a bunch of unloaded, you know, shoulder flexion drills or, you know, wall slides and all that. But we're trying to think of how we can actually influence, again, adding sarcomeres and series or training in the most lengthened positions with some tension. Like, we've done a lot more vertical pulling this year, and hanging, been a lot more aggressive in that regard.
I think too, everything lives on a continuum, right? So, you know, there's excessive flexion and extension that you could get through an exercise where you'd be like, hey man, I'm not comfortable with this anymore. But no one's on the other end of that. No one's out there with a protractor, like measuring someone's spinal angles as they go through their movement either. Right. So everyone has a bandwidth that they're comfortable with as a coach, and then a bandwidth that athlete functions within that they're comfortable with. You know, and then you work within those bandwidths. And as long as those are fine, then you feel like you're sitting in a good place on the continuum. So, you know, to an extent, I agree with you, Jordan. If someone's not in perfectly neutral spine at all times, I'm not going to pull them out of an exercise. But if they get to an extreme that is uncomfortable for me, or, you know, the athlete reaches a point that's uncomfortable for them, then that may be a time to make an adjustment.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of this two-part episode with Joe, Logan, and Jordan. I think this is a good place to stop. We're going to cover a ton of information between these two episodes, and I thought this was just an appropriate place for us to stop this one, check over the notes that we have, and get ready for part two. Three things that I took from the guys in this episode: understand what is in the whole program and the whole day so that you don't have to try to accomplish every goal with every exercise. Have an appropriate level of give and take when working with your athletes, and understand that everything lives on a continuum. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.